Randomonium it is. Mike Chambers, Vinny Eastwood, Charlie McGrath, somewhere on a road in America. In an undisclosed location. Yes. Right, sitting right next to Dick Cheney.
That's me.
That's you.
Charlie McGrath is in an undisclosed location, and Vinny Eastwood is in an unclothed location.
Wait, I mean, you've got this video thing popped up, and I'm sitting here watching it, and it's like you're closing and adapting your curtains. Naked?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't want to see people walking by the studio and seeing me naked while I broadcast, Mike. I mean, you know.
Well, I know you broadcast in the raw all the time, but everything you do is raw.
Well, see, that's the reason why my show kind of hooks people in, kind of thing, you know. And apparently, I've gotten a lot of women interested in the truth movement as a result. I joke. I don't do shows in the raw anymore. I mean, back in the day, before I used to do webcam like I'm doing now. Yep, there'd be many, many, many times. In fact, probably the majority of times where I would just be doing the show in a dressing gown.
And getting $5.95 a minute too, right?
Yeah. And my 900 number is 09 1 900 666 77 911.
That's it, huh? You even had extra numbers in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's that's the extension code, just in case you want to extend the New World Order just a little bit further by making another false flag.
Well, there we go, Charlie. We miss you last month. How you been?
Well, I've been well. I'm working on expanding our program to 2 hours over on Rents, and I'm just trying to keep up with all the action that we've been witnessing, especially the last 24 hours. I don't know if you spoke about it on your guys' program, but the Greek default seems to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and it's that deal that just keeps going on and on and on and on. I mean, how many times have they come up with a bailout deal? They release it. The Greek people basically reject it after their parliament approves it. And then they come back with yet another deal.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Economically, yes.
It is. I think the big difference on what happened on Friday, or yesterday rather, is the ISBA go ahead and declaring it a default. And that's the first time that's happened. And it's funny that ISBA is owned and operated by the same too big to fails that we've all known or come to know and hate. You know, the Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley. These guys are the ones who decide if an event is a credit event and a default. And they went ahead and decided it is. And the problem they have with that, the problem that could roll out of that and what makes it different is it allows all those CDS credit default swaps to be implemented. And they're the ones issuing them, and they're the ones backing them, and they're the ones who got to pay for them, and they're the ones who receive the benefit of them. So it's a really tricky situation, and the media is doing everything they can to play it down as a $3 billion deal, but the derivatives market in sovereign debt, or in CDSs rather, is between, you know, conservatively 15 to 30 trillion, not 3 billion, and a lot of people think this is the proverbial finger out of the dike moment where it's going to just flood from this point on. And now that I said that, I know Vinny's got something to say.
Yeah, I was thinking that these kind of meetings, putting economic policy in the way that you were just elaborated, they shouldn't be taking part in the Houses of Parliament or anything. They should be taking part in, like, dark snooker clubs or something like that, you know, where the light is real low and people are just hustling each other left, right, and center over the game. And I am quite concerned about this Greek crisis, namely because, what you're doing here is you're setting the precedent for taking away people's history. Like, for instance, the Acropolis on top of Athens, they're actually thinking about selling that to foreign banks, right? It's been there for 1,000+ years, goodness knows how many years, right? Tourists go there all the time. It's their most direct attachment to their history, and they want to sell it to foreign banks. How can you put a price on your history, I wonder? And more to the point, if anybody is even considering putting a price on your history, do they have any loyalty to your country whatsoever? I doubt it. I mean, when was the last time you saw the White House go up for sale or the Washington Monument? It just doesn't happen. Why? Because it's of historical significance and it belongs to everybody. And you're never going to sell it out to foreigners. Ah, yeah. But conveniently, the White House and the House of Congress have already been bought out by foreigners. So there's no need to mind about that.
Well, most definitely. And the other thing, too, what's interesting now is along with this week also, you've got Angela Merkel and the Germans. They're calling for a new examination of the EU Constitution. So they further trap these countries inside of the EU. They can't get them to go along with their nationalistic pride and everything. So instead, what they'll do is grab them by their currency and legislation and hold them there. When most of these people across Europe would rather be independent countries once again.
Just recently, Charlie, I think you might have heard this as well. There was a general explaining to a congressman just what kind of legal justification they need to go and invade countries or whatever. And he admitted that they don't actually need or even want Congress to approve wars anymore, and that they will now obey the dictate of international organizations such as NATO and the UN. Bye-bye sovereignty. You now work for the globalists directly. And it's even down in their own documents that they will gradually seize 51% of control of troops and place them directly under the command of the UN. I once told this to my Prime Minister, Mr. John Key. I think you can search the YouTube video, The John Key Ambush. And, of course, as with every politician who you ask a real question, they go, oh, send me a letter, and then walks off.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I'd like to comment on both of those. You know, Wolfgang Schäuble, he's a finance minister of Germany, over a year ago whispered into the ear of Angela Merkel that this crisis could be used and must be used in order to rewrite the Constitution of Germany and give more power to Brussels to be a governing body over all of Europe, not just over the European currency, but actually affecting what their policy can be when it comes to finance. And if you control a nation's finance, I mean, if you control the nation's money, you control the nation. And, you know, you're absolutely right. They want to take... They've already done it. I mean, inside of the last 3 years, some of these austerity measures do include public and national land of Greece that will go in order to pay off debt. And you know, the whole thing's about to pop. And I think this announcement by the same too big to fails that issued the sovereign debt and the same too big to fails that bet against it with their credit default swaps, them announcing that it was truly a credit event. I know it's not catching any attention right now in the media, but this is exactly what happened in 2008, and this is exactly what a lot of people, myself included, have been waiting for when they've shifted all this fraudulent failure from private debt into a public problem, and when they were ready, they will say, okay, well, it is now time to pay the piper. If they're calling these defaults a default and these CDSs kick in, it will absolutely be another round just like 2008, except on steroids, because these same firms will have to go to these governments and say, look, we don't have the money. If these countries default, we're bankrupt. We already know that we're too big to fail. If you let us fail, the whole global economy is going to fail. So I think we're not very far. And as a matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing the same kind of reactions that we saw in 2008, which is mass panic, by the next time we're all on the radio together.
I heard that during the last crisis, the 2008 crisis, that approximately 40% of the world's wealth was destroyed. So what we're dealing with now is a situation where the banks have accumulated all of that wealth after destroying it, essentially.
No,
and now they have total control.
No, we've got to be correct in our definitions here. Wealth is never destroyed. It's redistributed. And so they redistributed to themselves and their cohorts.
Well, what they say by destroyed, I mean, there's a certain amount of value, like, say, home prices and a certain amount of businesses, manufacturing, things like that that currently exist. Yeah. And after those that big crisis, all of those things, the house prices dropped down, and all of that wealth that people had accumulated, like, for example, equity on their homes, if they'd paid off half of their mortgage or something, all of a sudden they're foreclosed on. Mortgage is wealth that was destroyed, and that's how it works.
Yeah, you guys are both right. You're both right. It's destroyed for the middle class. But when it's destroyed for the average Joe six-pack, it gets redistributed into the pockets of the same people who engineered the crisis in the first place. So you're both right. You know, if you're Joe Blow on the street, your nest egg is destroyed. You know, I'm sitting on a house right now that is, it was worth $250,000 4 years ago. Right now, if I wanted to get rid of it in a hurry, I'd have to sell it for $130,000. So, I mean, there's a lot of wealth for the average person that has been destroyed, but it has been taken and put in the pockets of the two people who failed. And if I decide to let it go back to a bank, then they'll get paid on the back end for that as well. They'll shift it off to a publicly backed institution like Freddie or Fannie, and they can't lose. This is the thing. The game is rigged, and they absolutely cannot lose. This the declaration of default, I think, is their trigger. You know, I had a conversation on the program last night about this, and trying to, because it is so new. I mean, this hit it Friday, 1 hour before the New York markets closed. So we're still looking into it to see what it's going to look like Monday morning. A lot of people think that this was a push by these aforementioned too big to fail firms that are that comprise the ISDA, because Obama is trying to push off a war against Iran until after the elections of 2012. A lot of people think that is going against the power elite's wishes. They want Iran dealt with now, and they could care less about the U.S. election. So an event, a European financial event, would certainly cause panic in the markets. Some people think it's being used as leverage. We're going to collapse the global economy if you don't do this. But who knows? I mean, it's so intertwined, and the collusion is so thick. Who knows what the truth is? But I think it's going to get bad.
Something corroborating that, Lindsay Williams, I think I just listened to an interview with him on GCN, I think it was February 29th this year, so very, very recently, and he said that the war on Iran is now on, okay, and they will be invading it within the next couple of months. Not this month, and maybe not next month, but within a very short time frame of about 3 months, Iran will get invaded. This comes directly from his contacts in the elite, allegedly. And what they're saying is that they're now very unhappy with Obama because he's behind schedule and they're really ticked off with him. They also wanted to build a big pipeline down from Alaska, and Obama cancelled that out. So the elite aren't as happy with Obama as they would like to be. But I think that the American people and the people of this world shouldn't be happy with either of them, because let's face facts here. Just being screwed over is bad. Being completely and utterly raped until you have absolutely nothing left is worse. And it's not like those are your only two choices here. Throwing the bankers out, okay? You know, allegedly Jesus didn't like bankers very much and threw them out of the temple. You know, so if that massive Bible belt of Christians in the United States suddenly goes, hey, Jesus threw the bankers out of the temple. All right, let's go down to the Fed in the middle of Austin, Texas, and let's throw them bankers right out of it. All right, that would be
I'm
great.
Pretty sure we don't sound like that, Vinny. I'm pretty sure that is a very Kiwi-oriented impersonation of a redneck.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of rednecks here in New Zealand, except they don't sound like that either.
They sound like, mate, let's just drink some beer. What are you? Oh, we'll see. you know, a lot of the one thing regarding Iran that everybody keeps forgetting, that they, you know, Netanyahu says he wants to attack sooner than later. Obama's promised to give him some bunker busters if he'll wait so he can adequately do the job. But the in the meantime, we forget the two 800-pound gorillas in the room, Russia and China. Russia and China are not going to sit idly by while we go in and start blowing up crap in Iran. They have too much money invested there, and that's why it's going to happen sooner than later. I just unless these people are ready for us to fight a world war, and this time this is for keeps. This is against the old world order factions against the new type factions of Russia and China, who are the new kids on the block, and have got a lot of power. If this is what they want, then this is exactly what they're going to get, because those two countries are not going to sit idly by and let us do this close to their borders, especially Russia. The Russians and the Iranians. The Russians and the Iranians vacation together in the Caspian Sea. It's that close.
Well, the third element there that you missed, Mike, was India. When the EU threatened to cut off the oil imports from Iran, Iran said, well, frack you. We're going to cut you off. We're going to do it early. And we're going to close the Strait of Hormuz. Who comes along to Iran saying, okay, well, I know you guys aren't allowed to sell oil in US dollars now because of the sanctions. So I'll tell you what, we'll go buy all your oil in gold. You know, we get about, like, what, 14 million barrels of oil out of Iran a day or some ridiculous figure like that. India has now started to buy Iranian oil with gold. So there's the three 800-pound gorillas. There's India, China, and Russia that are behind Iran. And the remaining superpowers are the EU slave states and the real slave states, the United States. Because this is I think, what they're really trying to do is just smash up this big World War III mentality, get everybody freaked out. And I think that what they're trying to do is basically eliminate the competition. You know, this is a hostile takeover in a corporate sense of the word, but it's a lot more hostile because now you've got depleted uranium to throw into the mix, where not only will your wealth be destroyed, but your people will not be able to breed properly for the next, I don't know, 10,000 years.
Here's the thing: if this is a game that they want to play, and they want to fight a world war, here's the problem that the old world factions have, and it's the fact that they sold their manufacturing bases to who? China. Once you're out of spare parts, you don't build any more ships. You don't build any more planes. You don't have no more bullets because you're out of steel. It's goodbye, Goomba, game over.
Well, during World War II, the United States simply retrofitted all of its existing manufacturing and created more, and became the largest war machine manufacturing base in the world in a very short succession. So that's not of great concern to me. It's not like the United States is going to go to war with China and say, hey, guys, we need 100,000 mass-produced Chinese tanks, okay? Can you hook us up, bro? We'll give you some fake Federal Reserve notes that are devalued.
but here's the thing, Vinny. Here's where they have countries like the United States and Europe by the virtual NADs. We have no raw materials. We no longer mine them. We no longer produce them. The amount of time it would take to get those operations back in effect would take years and years. There's where the big bugaboo is, that once you've gone round one, you've gone round two, and all your stuff is gone that you've got to start replacing, once you run out of what you have on hand, you don't replace it again, because you'll end up with Russia and China and India teamed up together against the old world factions.
Well, we are talking about the globalist intention specifically to destroy the United States. The globalists hate the United States. They hate its people. They hate its freedom. They hate its constitution. They hate its history, and they want it to be a slave, subservient, post-industrialized faction, essentially, with no power. That's why they've got all these UN treaties for biodiversity, and they're basically stealing United States sovereign land as we speak, taking it all for themselves, putting it under direct UN control, and it's been happening for quite some time. You can barely run around any United States national park without seeing United States or United Nations biological preserve signs, that kind of thing, which will eventually become off limits to people.
And those parts that don't have it, those are being overrun by drug cartels. You can't visit them anyway.
Yeah, in Arizona.
I just enjoy listening to the crew here. Here's the deal. First of all, you guys still got me on here?
Yeah, we're here. You're there.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good. I just want to make sure my signal's still good as I'm driving from one undisclosed location to another. Either a couple scenarios are going to play out here. As far as China and Russia warring, bringing us to another world war, us against them, I think Mike's right. We don't have the capacity, and I think Manny's right. We could get there again real quick, but we don't need that. We don't need to do that because we could have a nuclear holocaust, in 15 minutes. So I think that if it goes to that point, it's game over for humanity. I mean, you get your Georgia Guidestones wish of, half a billion people left on the planet. But in the relatively short term, we're looking at an action against Iran, and I don't know if that leads to immediate global world war with China, with Russia, the United States, and Europe, or not.
No, Charlie, your signal's going dead.
He's either in betwixt and between the undisclosed locations, or something has happened along the way.
Yeah. See, me personally, I think that creative solutions are usually the best way to solve problems of any kind. You know, like, for example, the reason why everybody's so massively in debt is because the elite came up with a creative solution to the problem that they don't control absolutely everything. Charlie's back.
No, that's just a voicemail.
Oh, bad. That's not good. Anyway, I'll finish up with my point. The elite figured out that they could get everybody in debt and wind up owning everything with a creative solution. It's called making it up. It's just like, oh, genius. I didn't realize I could just make the money up. And then they buy everything out. They buy real wealth with money that they just made up out of thin air. And so I think the creative solution to all this debt is exactly the same solution as creating all the debt. You just pretend that it doesn't exist. You know, hey, look, we've got all this debt and everything that's useless. It's credit default swaps. It's quantitative easing. It's bailouts. The big banks don't mean nothing. All this money's not actually tied up in anything of real use. It's not producing food. It's not producing water. It's not making bigger buildings for cities or anything like that. Let's just pretend that it doesn't exist. Boom. All debt's forgiven. No more problems anymore, ladies and gentlemen. Sweet as a nut. You'll actually be able to afford to buy a home and make interest forever illegal.
Well, I'm with you. At some point in time, you've got to nuke the debt and start over. Now, I've had discussion with people about how far down the road do we do that. Do we do all public and private, or all the public and partial private, and what? But, I'm with you. The only way you get rid of it and to get rid of the problem is to nuke it. You start from scratch with a non-debt-based currency, whether it's puka shells or another fiat currency, but not printed at debt because you never pay it back. And then now they're talking about total dollars that are in the system, including these derivatives and the like. We're not talking tens of trillions or 100 trillions. They're talking quadrillions of dollars in the pipe with all these derivatives and these credit default swaps and securities that have been created.
Yeah, well, quadrillions. Several. Like, I've heard as many as up to 4 quadrillion. That's $4,000 trillion of debt. How many people are walking around today that can carry $4,000 trillion worth of debt on their back? It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. Vinny Eastwood.
Yeah.
I think I'm back.
Yeah, we got
you. Oh, I thought this was Charlie's Pizza. We were calling for a Supreme.
So what? No. Yeah,
I wanted a Vermin Supreme with.
Oh, good one. Well, I don't. I thought I was gonna have clear reception between point A and point B, but obviously not. I must have dropped out.
I thought you dropped out because of a drone strike.
I took the don't comply, ask why too far, and I even stopped talking. I just fall off the air.
Well, when you're rolling around in a creeper inside one of those old Minuteman tunnels going across the country, it does take a while, and you occasionally will drop out.
I'm inspecting my 2012 bunker.
Yes, indeed.
And it's deep underground. But look, I do want to finish my thought if I could. We might have jumped topics by now, but looking at China, Russia coming into it, you know, if that happens, then it's game over. Forget it. I mean, the only quick option the West has is nuke. And, you know, we're talking about the largest nuclear powers on Earth. If it got to that point, I mean, you know, like I said, the Georgia Guidestone thing would come to pass. But I think if we looked at just near-term scenarios, you know, let's say we attack Iran in the next month or two, goodbye global economy, because you know, regardless of how much they produce, you know, the Straits of Hormuz, we have 20% of the world's oil flowing through there every day, and we see $4 a gallon gas right now. So it absolutely chokes out what's remaining of the global economy. That's scenario one. Or scenario two, the sovereign debt issue blows up in Europe, and you know, we don't have to pretend that what would happen there. We already know. You know, when they revalued it to 50%, MF Global went out of business. A bunch of American folks who were holding money in those accounts got screwed. So, you know, they revalued this debt. They default on the debt instantly. All kinds of people, all kinds of institutions are insolvent. They're bankrupt. They're begging governments. And we have 2008. You know, it makes 2008 look like a romper room. So either of these two scenarios will, without a doubt, no chance of it not happening in the very near future. And, you know, maybe, I think you quoted Lindsey Williams, I didn't hear that part, but if he's saying within the next couple months, that makes sense. You know, one of these two things is going to pop soon. Or both.
Exactly. It's just this giant international incident pimple, and it is about to pop.
Or I could have said that, because that is much more graphic, and I like it. Thank you, Vinny.
You're welcome. It's a depleted uranium pimple.
It's like a goiter, and all Roberts is coming to take it out. Get out of there, goiter. Get out of there, goiter.
My man Rattlesnake bit me on the ass. Somebody's going to have to suck out that poison.
You're going to die.
I thought I heard crickets chirping when Charlie was out there all of a sudden.
I was there. The doctor said you were going to die.
Die from a cryptic critter infection of some description. What's happening now, I think, around the world? So we've got constant cacophony of crises that are simultaneous. You know, that's my philosophy. Everything's screwed, and it's screwed really, really bad, and it's all going on at the same time, right? So
By design.
Yeah, and some people try to understand all of the things that are going wrong, and they wind up driving themselves nuts. Some people specialize, and they get way down the rabbit hole, and they wind up driving themselves nuts. And some people just listen to all these people that are driving themselves nuts and have a few laughs and stay sane. And I think that's probably one of the most important things that people need to recognize here, is that maintaining your own sanity, okay? There's one thing that people have forgotten in their truth of survival kit in the main. And it's right here between your ears. It's called your brain. That is your biggest survival tool. And if it is not healthy, if it is not balanced, you ain't going to have much of a shot, really. Doesn't matter how much stored food or toilet paper you got lying around.
Oh, Vinny, help me. I got the brain pain. I need your help, Vinny. Help me with my brain pain.
Vinny, I couldn't agree with you more. And in fact, you know, I for the last couple of years, people talk about, you know, having more preppers on and that kind of thing. We do get them on there, and they're important. There's a lot of good people teaching that. But you know, my thought has always been the same, which is you better be mentally prepared for what we're heading into, and you know, realize where we're at. And I think the people who are, you know, there's more and more people waking up every day, and the ones who are more recent to the party, so you know, the guys just waking up, they got the roughest time of it, because if you've been following this for years, these kind of things aren't really that surprising. I mean, it's horrible to see the trajectory we're on, but if you wake up all of a sudden and realize, holy crap, all this patriotic talk is garbage, and you know, these crashes, these financial crashes, my financial future, my financial destiny is not in my own control. And, the if the deck is stacked and it's going to come apart because they say it's going to, you know, that's a pretty big wake up call, and that can push a lot of people to I watched a video last night of a lady in Greece who got her wages cut by 20%, and now on the first round of austerity, this time they're going to eliminate her job, and she's on a balcony, you know, ready to dive off there. And, that, I think we're going to see more and more of that as we press forward in this global depression.
Well, yeah, and then I think you'll see more activity from people in their response to their governments once more people have their arcs scored. And it's just literally a matter of time. Now, granted, we've had some areas like where I'm at, Oklahoma in America, has not been hit too hard. But see, we lost all the jobs years before that. There was nothing to lose. We've been on the upswing since. We're doing fairly well, but what is our state government doing? They're, now that we got extra money starting to come in, they're already finding a way to spend it. They're going to end up right back where they were.
Yeah, we have this thing in New Zealand here where local government, they get a certain amount of budget every year, right? And let's say, for example, their budget is $200 million, and they wind up saving $20 million, and they wind up spending $180 million. Then what happens next year is their budget actually gets decreased to $180 million, and then they have to subsist on that. So what the councils have decided to do is they'll start saying instead of $200 million, we'll overspend by $20 million. So that way next year we get another $20 million, okay, and so on and so forth until you get – it's basically like perpetual debt. And this is interesting because when you think about perpetual debt and you have a look at virtually any industry, like the music industry, for example, do you know how they pay artists when they first give them record contracts? They don't just give them money. They open a bank account in their – name, and they loan the money to them.
If they wind up being
successful and wind up actually getting out there and sweet, okay, that money is all paid back and it's all honky dory. But if you don't, you then are a debt slave to that industry. And that's why in the music industry, many music producers used to be in finance. And it's the exact same with every single company, industry, everything all over the place. It's about exploiting the limited period of time of creativity and talent, particularly by young people, younger employees. In the oil industry, for instance, I was interviewing Ian R. Crane. He used to work there. And his company had the policy that while their employees are between the ages of 22 or 25 and 30, they have to be milked for as many of their new ideas as possible to benefit the company while their creativity is at a highest level possible. And then while those people are coming up with those ideas and creative solutions while employed by the company then gets to patent and control those ideas, control the royalties. So essentially, I think that this is part of the reason why I cannot be employed anymore. I think I suffer from employophobia or something, is that I don't want to be a slave. I don't want my ideas to be able to get taken away from me. I don't want to benefit somebody else if they're not going to reciprocate and pay it forward or at the very least pay it back. And that's the real problem with the banking industry, is that they have no concept of paying back. And if they did have a concept of paying back, they would print the interest as well as the debt so that people do, in fact, have enough money in circulation to pay off all the debt. But they don't, do they? Because it is mathematically impossible to loan money from somebody at extortionist interest rates and then ever pay it back. So it's mathematically impossible, especially if the interest is not printed.
Exactly. Yeah, and so you're always on the hook, and you got to get one more fix. Oh, the next fix will get it. No, just you're close, but not close. One more time. Just, you get to skosh more, but you get closer, but you never can finish it off. It's like going to the payday loan place.
Yeah. I mean, why do you think they roll up dollar bills and snort cocaine with them? It's essentially what it is.
It's toilet paper. It's a straw.
It's a drug delivery system, and that's all it is. A drug delivery system that binds you and your cocaine to help keep you hooked. That's it.
Charlie, okay. You got your dollar bills out, or what you doing there, bud?
No, I'm just enjoying the program.
I don't, Charlie, you went on high.
No, I'm here. I'm listening in, and I think this system in the form it's in now is destined to fail. It has throughout history, and it will again. I see what's coming. You know, if the powers that be, the power elite, get their way, it'll be global governance, and it'll be sold on the notion that independent thinking people are dangerous. Independent governments that are representative of their constituents are dangerous. Republics are dangerous, and they can't get anything done. So our solution will be global financial governance, which is global government. And that push is, I mean, you know, we talk about the U.S., you know, as being, Vinny's talking about the power elite don't like the U.S. because of the Constitution. You know, they've done their job here. It's over. It's completely been eviscerated of any vestige of the Constitution. We don't have it. We don't have representative government. We've lost it. We don't need Congress to wage war on the planet. We don't need government to protect capitalism, because capitalism is bought and paid for, at least this legal-based capitalism is bought and paid for by the people that cannot fail. So, you know, their last hurdle was Europe breaking down all these sovereign nations, breaking down their parliaments, breaking down their sovereignty, and, you know, this is where we're at. And so we're going to be leaving this current system, and where we go is the either great part or the terrifying part.
Well, what I find is that you're right, Charlie, is that the United States has robbed has been robbed. Basically, it's been burgled from everything that matters, with the exception of one thing: guns. The United States citizens still have a lot of guns, and in my experience, when it comes to genocidal campaigns against populations, the only thing that will stop that population from being enslaved is being capable of defending themselves from an armed assailant. And essentially, I feel that the Second Amendment is the last straw. Once you take that away, you know then and there that the extermination is not just planned, but it's coming very, very soon. And I'm waiting and watching for that day when they do a national gun ban in the United States. Nobody's allowed to have guns. They have to turn them all in. We'll give you shopping vouchers. We'll give you crappy plug-in hybrid electric cars with electromagnetic radiation that'll give you cancer within the next 5 years in order to compensate you for giving up your liberty and your capacity to defend yourself. You know, that's what I'm waiting for, and I think that very shortly we might begin to see that.
That's interesting. I don't think that play would, I guess there's a couple schools of thought on it. I mean, you know, that play would show their hand, and you would have real, legitimate, bona fide, probably successful secession movements at that point. We're already on the verge of seeing that, you know, with Wyoming recently declaring they're putting together legislation for Armageddon, paraphrasing, of course. But multiple states deciding that gold and silver is their legal tender. Some states are making contingency plans for their own currency when the Federal Reserve implodes. I think if there was a national gun ban, you know, and to be truthful, if you look at the major population centers and their ordinances they have there, it is pretty onerous to own a weapon in New York City, you know, and very difficult. But, you know, out here in whatever flyover country, that would never, ever fly. I mean, that would never be able to be implemented here. You would have the OK Corral in every podunk state across this country.
Every farm road, every burg, every village, there would be a fight to the death.
Yeah, but again, do you really need to? I mean, if you want to put the hammer of the government down, the tyranny of the government, onto the back of the people, who cares if they have guns? I mean, if you control everything from, you know, the food that's grown out of the ground to the energy that goes into the gas tank, and you could shut it all off, well, who cares? Let them destroy each other. Let them kill each other trying to get those scraps that are left. I think there's an ability. Go ahead. Sorry, Mike.
I was going to say, I mean, in agreement with your point here, there's only 16% of the population that's now rural. Essentially, you cut them off from the highways and the byways, let them fend for themselves, and let them keep their guns.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the cities, it's already clamped down. I mean, you know, Warren Pollack, he's a regular guest on the program. He lives in New York. It's almost impossible. And if you do have one, it's so registered and so tracked and so traceable that, you know, you're basically borrowing it from the government anyway.
Right.
Yeah, it's an obscene costless expense. I think there was somebody, some state, some city, I think, was had an ordinance for $500 a year fee just to have concealed carry. And when you've got concealed carry, you will very rarely ever have an occasion to use it. Like, for example, on the same day that there was a shooting in a Wendy's in New York City, which has relative gun bans and people are not armed in general, a guy comes in armed and he kills a whole bunch of people in this restaurant. On the same day, and I think it was Tampa, Florida, a guy comes into a 7-Eleven wielding a gun. One of the shoppers was I think it might have been 70- or 80-year-old man. He was carrying concealed carry. He pulled out his weapon and he pointed it at the guy, got him to drop his gun, and he held him there until the police got there. Exactly on the same day as well, there was a small coffee house, I think it might have been in Wyoming, where a guy ran in with a gun and tried to, with a knife, sorry, and tried to hold up the clerk and rob him. And another citizen with concealed carry pulled out a gun, got him to drop the knife, and held him there until the police got there. Now, both of those people who took out their concealed carries, they never made it to the national news, but the Wendy's killer made it to the national news, didn't he? It's because when you use guns defensively, what crime is committed? No crime's committed. How many victims are there? No victims. And it happens far more often than one would think. To the point in where Dr. John Lott, professor of economics, has declared that more guns does, in fact, equal less crime by virtue of the fact that approximately 2 million murders, rapes, violent assaults, robberies, etc., are prevented by citizens with concealed carry.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I agree with that. It certainly... And if you are in a place where the law-abiding citizen is likely to be carrying a gun, I mean, it certainly is going to give pause to any thug who wants to try to take what you got.
Which is why in every single case worldwide, doesn't matter what country you're talking about, whether that be Japan, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Germany, England, whenever gun bans have been passed, and this is most obvious in, say, for example, Washington, D.C., whenever gun ban legislation is passed, specifically banning handguns as well, the murder rate shoots up dramatically. Why? Because it's only the law-abiding citizens who would use guns only defensively who would stop carrying them and abide by the law. The criminals, on the other hand, don't obey the law anyway. So they keep their guns, and now they have an unarmed population to prey upon.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, and the larger the crime, the more fear, the more need for police, the more need for total control, crackdown. We get a search as you walk around. And so basically you're giving away your liberty and freedom for the illusion of security. And, of course, what did Mr. Franklin say? Those that seek that neither get it nor deserve it.
Now isn't it interesting, though? Didn't children in the United States actually used to take their guns to school like decades and decades ago? How many school shootings were around here?
When I was in high school, junior high and high school, kids that drove to work routinely had guns in a gun rack. It was no big deal. Kids walked in with knives. We had good sized knives, hunting knives. Nobody said anything.
Nobody did anything. It's because people weren't trained to be ninnying, pretentious, frightened out of their minds, cowardly, constitutionally uneducated individuals. Now that's almost all you have, to the point in which you have a school shooting and everybody blames the guns. And they don't recognize that think something like a third of all school shootings actually get prevented because one of the teachers has a gun and stops the person. Okay, right. When you've got an unarmed group of kids or whatever, mate, they're easy pickings. And it's the same methodology that you're dealing with the citizenry defending themselves from an armed thug. Whether you're walking down the street and suddenly 20 gang members go, "We're going to kill you, you know, nobody will find the body." You show them a business end of a pistol, doesn't matter that there's 20 of them, they run. Okay, and 98% of the time, just the showing that you have a firearm is sufficient enough to break off an attacker, and less than 2% of those 2% of times that you do actually have to wind up pulling a gun on an attacker does a shot get fired, and only 5% out of that 2% of that 2% is the gun actually fired at the assailant. It's mostly just warning shots. And only a third of that 2% of 2% of 2% actually hit or wound the assailant. And only, I think, maybe a half of that 2% of 2% of 2% of a half of 1% actually wind up killing the assailant. So you have a look at it. You're talking about one of the most deadly devices that has ever been devised by a firearm.
Yeah, I can say from experience here that in the middle of the night, you go rouse somebody and you got a rifle laying across your stomach in the truck, and that barrel the business in is pointing out that window, they get the idea, and they're very polite, and they're very compliant with anything that you might ask them to do, unless they've got one bigger than yours, which at that point you better be ready to fire yours.
Yeah, exactly. Talk softly and carry a big gun.
Big stick, yeah, big stick. Well, you know, here's the difference. Democracy is a sheep and two wolves trying to decide what to have for dinner. A republic, which is what we're supposed to have here in America, is two wolves and a sheep with a gun deciding what we're going to have for dinner. Big deal.
They just call me the big stick.
The big stick.
Charlie, this is a family show.
I know. Well, Charlie the big stick, Nick Graff, is how I prefer to be called from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Having fun. It's pandemonium hour. Randomonium.
Pandemonium.
You never know what's going to come up on Randomonium, eh? It's just like whether we're talking about defending yourself and being capable of understanding the rigors of gun control or international finance or scumbaggery of any kind. This is the show to wing it. And it's a shame that we only get to do it for 1 hour, guys.
I know. Yeah. We've got 6-7 minutes left, so we best not squander.
Mm.
Well, here's a topic that I'm working on a video on right now. I shot it last night on the program. The new DHS word list has been divulged. In fact, I found a story online on it that actually linked the PDF file from the Department of Homeland Security, which is the analyst desktop reference guide on how to monitor media, both mainstream media and social media. And what was a half a dozen words that I did a commentary video on it maybe 6-8 months ago on those words, and in that video I made sure I used every single one of them and then explained at the end that in this 30-second video all these words have been tied up into it, and without a doubt it's greatly expanded now of word phrases, acronyms that if they're being used, flagged, and then they're categorized in different levels of importance. What I found interesting, and like I said, it's multiple pages of words, and anything that you could think of that alternative media talks about, those phrases are in there. But what I found interesting in this report, 40 pages long, and it's littered with warnings and demands that if anything is heard that disparages the Department of Homeland Security or the agencies that fall under it, which is a huge amount of personnel and agencies involved, everything from Border Patrol to Coast Guard to, on down the line, there's just, thousands and thousands of people that fall under this umbrella. And if anything that is in the media that is disparaging to the Department of Homeland Security, their efforts, their preparedness, then that gets special attention, almost ranked as high as bona fide reports on terror or mass pandemic type events. These real game changing events, they consider disparaging remarks against their, you know, the Stasi to be warranting special attention by special analysts or management inside the Department of Homeland Security. So it's littered with cover-your-butt type language, and it's all about perception, and it's all about making sure you stamp out anybody who has a problem with these Stasi-style tactics.
Yeah, and this is why I think that a lot of the intelligence agencies that operate within the U.S. need to be rebranded. Like the NSA needs to become the National Snitch Alliance. The DHS needs to become the Deadly Homie Service. You know, yeah, there's a myriad of different things that need to be happening here. And quite frankly, I think they need to hire some very expensive marketers from Hollywood to come up with some adequate titles that can now currently accurately represent in a very positive light the great service that the FBI does to the people of the United States. I mean, we wouldn't have any staged terror or manufactured terrorist groups without them. And I, for one, am eternally grateful.
It is dramatic, and it gives you something to watch. There's no doubt about it.
And so now, what's the question? Do you, you might optimize your website for the search engine, but do you optimize your video for Homeland Security?
There you go.
Homeland Security optimized with every keyword known to man. Here we are.
Well, actually, I do have every keyword known to man. I've got a big list of them here, and you can pop them down on your site. So just in case you really do want somebody to start surveilling you, you know, it's a conspiracy, primers, detonators, initiators, main charge, nuclear charges, ambush, sniping, motorcade, IRS, BATF, JTF-6, MJTF, HRT, SRT, hostages, musicians, weapons, TNT, RDX, AMFO, HMTD, picric acid, silver nitrate, mercury fulminate, presidential motorcade, saltpeter, charcoal, sulfur, C4, composition B, amatol, PETN, lead azide, lead stuff. It goes on for quite a while. Like, it's a huge, huge list. Like, that's only like the first two lines out of about 100.
What is that out of, Vinny?
Oh, a friend of mine in Australia. He sent me this list, and he says, if you want to tag your articles so that every single intelligence agent will be clicked to it and they will read it, you just copy this entire ridiculously long list of keywords that they searched and search terms that they're after, and then you pop them in as the taglines for your articles or your radio shows or anything like that. So that way it triggers every single button that they've got. And so they come in and they're like, whoa, oh my God, this person must be very, very dangerous. He's used over 700 key words in one sentence.
Go ahead,
Charlie.
Sorry. I think we got him. If you use all those key words, I think they got the next bin Laden, which is probably a key word.
Yeah. Of course it is. And I'll just copy paste it here into the chat room because it's just absolutely fantastic. And
that is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd say, why not? You know, my philosophy is they're watching anyway, okay? They're watching everything we do. They're hearing everything we say. Every single cell phone, or every single text message, email, or whatever, under the Project Echelon Treaty, which New Zealand and Canada and the US and Australia and all the other English-speaking nations have all signed up to, Well, it's illegal to spy on your own citizens without a warrant, but it's not illegal for you to spy on another country's citizens without a warrant. So they've linked up this huge apparatus with satellites and whatnot called Project Echelon, where they record every single cell phone conversation that goes on, and they even have the microphones to your cell phones recording even when the cell phone's not on, unless, of course, it's got the battery taken out of it. You know, this kind of stuff. And it all goes into this massive, massive, massive database, red flagged and flagged for analysis in real time. To the point in which some of the facilities where they're storing all this information are so thirsty for power now, because they've got all this useless information of every conversations everybody's ever had. that is causing rolling brownouts in the United States sometimes. And it just goes to show you, when you're real paranoid, boy, do you spend a lot of resources and waste a lot of resources trying to satisfy your paranoia for stuff that doesn't exist. And I think this is what the...
Go ahead.
Well, this is what the people of the United States now suffer from, a state of perpetual distractional paranoia. Like, for example, they're all afraid of things that they shouldn't be afraid of, you know? Like shark attacks, for example. What's your chances of being eaten by a shark? About the same possibility of being struck by lightning. But during lightning storms, people don't cower and freak out or anything. They watch them because they look really cool, right? So people's priorities are way out of whack. Well, you know, what's the likelihood of being killed by a terrorist? It's actually far more likely that you'll be eaten by a shark or struck by lightning.
But here's the thing in a nutshell, and we've got to go here. But the thing in a nutshell is this: everybody gets their information from the same source, and that's the mainstream media through the auspices of the government, giving this piece of information and that information, and it's repeated over and over and over again until people believe it. And then they accept it as the fact. That's why you have this homeland paranoia society that we got running around. I mean, shoot, they might as well should have just called it the fatherland and been done with it. And when we bring on Wagner and make him a huge star again. Yeah. And we're out of time.
We do live in the global Fourth Reich, don't we? The Nazis didn't lose World War II. They simply changed venues.
Exactly. And paperclipped it all. Stuck in a file. And here they are. Yeah. Yeah, I think we lost Charlie again. He's in between locations. Another hour, another month has blown by quickly here on Randomonium.
Mm-hmm. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, you can check out me, Vinnie Eastwood, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. There's Vinnie with a Y. Just Google Vinnie Eastwood, you know, cut the BS. Just Vinnie Eastwood, Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, the lighter side of genocide, because the world's so full of chaos and madness. If you lose that sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts.
And, but when you Google it, put C4 in front of Vinny Eastwood, see what you come up with. And my name is Mike Chambers, website MikeChambersLive.com. We'll see you back here next month on Randomonium. Matt Navarro is next with the New World Odor Report. Yes.
And Charlie McGrath, WideAwakeNews.com.
WideAwakeNews.com, that's correct. Guys, have a great month. See you later.